Bernice was my mother, and she was born in 1917. And she must have graduated from high school about 1930-35, and then she lived in Mecklenburg, North Carolina. She found a job where she could dress up and go to work, even in the rural South at that time. And she had a friend, and they would walk to work together. And as they would walk to work after a couple of weeks, they would pass under a bridge, and on the top of this bridge, over this bridge was a little white kid who would call out, "Nigger, nigger, nigger." And then they ignored him for a while, and this went on for about a week or two. And so one day she decided she would just stop. So she stopped, and she asked him to come down and speak to her. And he said no. And she said, "I'm not going to hurt you. Come down." So he came down, and she said, "You're a nigger too." And he said, "No, I'm not. I'm white." She said, "You're a white nigger." And so he said, "I'm not." And she said, "If you don't believe me, go home and ask your mother." And so then after that, they would pass under the bridge, and he would be over the bridge. And at that point, he would take off running. My great-grandmother, Bernice was my mother, was a Cherokee Indian who married a slave. And in fact, it was my great-great-grandmother, my great-grandmother's mother. And she, she married a slave, which was illegal. But she could not live as a slave, so she decided that what she would do is run away. So she ran away and started slave revolts. And as she continues the slave revolts, the white people would go and try to find her, but they couldn't. And so they labeled her a witch. She, with my great-great-grandfather, had two children, a boy and a girl. The girl was my great-grandmother. And so she... the two kids eventually contacted the disease typhus, and they put them in the pest house to die. And while they were in the pest house, delirious and so forth, my great-grandmother said that she could see her mother coming to her from far away, and she came in through a window opening and said she crawled across the floor like a slithered across the floor like a slave, and then administered some herbs to them. And when they came to bury them, they found them in the pest house playing, and they both lived until well past manumission.
At that point, he would take off running.
My great-grandmother, Bernice was my mother.
In 1961, I entered Howard University. And in once I entered Howard University, I met Edward Brown, who is the older brother of H. Rapp Brown, and Stokely Carmichael,
but she could not live
became
as a slave,
the chair of a student nonviolent coordinating
ran
away
and started slave revolt.
Interestingly enough, at this reading, it's the 50th anniversary of the Freedom Rides, and they had both just come off of the Freedom Rides. And Stokely and I and Ed, we all became good friends, and eventually Stokely and I were supposed to have gotten an apartment together. What happened was, Stokely got an apartment with one of his colleagues in SNCC, a white guy named Butch Carnes. And so he and Butch remained roommates and so forth. And then eventually Stokely left SNCC, and then H. Rapp Brown became the
coordinator of SNCC. When he became the coordinator, he tried to put all of the white people out, and he was successful with the exception of Butch Kahn, who told him that he was not going to leave because he had no other place to go.
Lived until well past manumission.
At that point, he would take off running. My great-grandmother, Bernice was my mother. In 1961, my family legends go back as far as a person who we call Granddaddy Myers.
Edward Brown.
And Granddaddy Myers was a slave, and he was a big black breeder buck, but he was also a runner. So he would run away, and they would catch him, and he would run away, interestingly enough. And we don't know whether he even knew where he was running to. He just couldn't take his condition. So eventually he ran away. And finally,
Stokely and I,
his master beat him so badly until he got tired of it and grabbed his master and then just squeezed him to death. And so, of course, they lynched Granddaddy Myers and castrated him and put his genitals in his mouth as a warning to the other slaves not to run away or to be obstinate.
And then H. Rap Brown became the
coordinator of SNCC.
And crawled across the floor
when he became the coordinator, he tried to put all of the white people out, and he was successful
then,
with the exception
of
Butch Kahn, who told him that he was not going to leave because he had no other place to go.
Lived until well past manumission.
At that point, he would take off running. My great-grandmother, Bernice was my mother.
In 1961,
my family legends go back as far as a person who we call Granddaddy Myers.
Edward Brown.
And Granddaddy Myers
Isabel
was a slave.
Isabel Elizabeth Craig White was
big black
my breeder bug grandmother.
But he was also a runner.
And,
she was born
in
1874. And they would catch him. And he'd run away.
And so in the late
and we don't know whether he even knew
1800,
where
she began to
take his condition. So
date my grandfather, whose name was Fleming White.
And finally,
and
his master beat him.
As family legend has it, one
he
time,
got tired of it and grabbed his mask.
Grandfather, who I never met, but who I understand was a dandy and a bowler and
so,
spats.
Of course,
and,
they lynched Granddaddy Myers,
a frock coat,
and castrated
and carrying
him,
a derringer,
his
decided to go and see his betrothed.
To the other slaves,
so they're in the rural country, I guess, in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina. So he went down to a path that led to her house, but the path went through a low-lying vale, and it was in the early evening. So as he went through the vale, there was a mist of fog over the whole thing. And as he went down into this, he couldn't see, and he ran into something which turned out to be, he thought, a ram. And he pushed it, and but it was much larger than any ram he'd ever seen, so he pushed it and it went nowhere. And so he stepped back, took his derringer, shot it, and a flash of light came up, which lifted him off the ground, and hysterically he ran to my grandmother's residence and refused to leave. And this is a family legend, though I always think it's probably just a way that he was figured out to spend the night with his fiance.
my great-grandmother.
Bernice was my mother.
In 1961, my family legends go back as far as a person who we call Granddaddy Myers.
Edward Brown.
And Granddaddy in 1970, I went to work founding the outreach department at the Corcoran Gallery of Art. In 1974, I decided to leave, and they did not want me to leave. So they did all kinds of things to keep me there or to keep contact with
my grandfather.
So what happened was, one day somebody had given him money to have this big dinner and to invite all these dignitaries. And so they invited me, and it was a box dinner, and they placed me on the frock coat in the office of the director of the gallery on his carpet, and we were having our floor dinner there. And the people with whom I was having dinner was the sculptor Ann Truitt and her granddaughter. Louise Nevelson,
a path that led
and,
to her house, but the path
Lee
was a low-lying veil, and it was in the early evening, so as he went through the veil, there was a mist of fog over the whole thing, and as he went down into this, he couldn't see, and he ran into something which turned out to be, he thought, a ram, and he pushed it, but it was much larger than any ram he'd ever seen, so he pushed it, and it went nowhere, and so he stepped back, took his derringer, shot it, and a flash of light came up, which lifted him off the ground, and hysterically he ran to my grandmother's residence and refused to leave. And this is a family legend, though I always think it's probably just a way that he was figured out to spend the night with his fiancée. In 1961, my family legends go back as far as a person who we call Granddaddy Myers. Edward Brown.
And Granddaddy in 1970, my mother found me, as I said, in 1917. And went to school in Mecklenburg, North Carolina, probably started school at about 1903. And most of her life, she had wanted to become an artist, but her mother sent her off to teachers' college once she graduated from high school.
Dinner and to invite
but
all
then my at that
so
time when my mother was in elementary school in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, and there were two health providers for the
in the office
the black kids in the county. One was a Dr. Brown,
who
was the health provider in Charlotte in the city of Charlotte.
The other
with whom was an itinerant nurse. Interesting enough, that itinerant nurse was the sculptor Selma Brown, who also wanted to become an artist, but her family sent her off to nursing school. But eventually, she left nursing and went to New York, married the poet Claude McKay, and she and I became friends much later. Unfortunately, I was never able to get her and my mother together.
And he pushed it, and but it was much larger than any ram he'd ever see, so he pushed it, and it went nowhere. And so he stepped back, took his derringer, shot it, and a flash of light came up, which lifted him off the ground, and hysterically he ran to my grandmother's residence and refused to leave. And this is a family legend, though I always think it's probably just a way that he was figured out to spend the night with his fiancée.
In 1961, 61
my family legends go back as far as a person who we call Granddaddy Myers.
Edward Brown.
And Granddaddy in 1970, my mother, I graduated from high school in Philadelphia in 1959. Went at that point in Mecklenburg, North Carolina. At that time, it was in the middle of the student sit-ins at the Woolworths, specifically in North Carolina. And a friend of mine asked me if I would come down to pick it Woolworth that was at that time at 13th and Chestnut Street in Philadelphia. So I went with her, and as we were picketing, there were two white women would come by in there for the limousines driven by their black chauffeurs and call out all kind of invectives to us. And then a friend of mine who graduated from high school with me came by and said, oh, I thought this was for high school kids.
An itinerant nurse.
Finally, a black woman came by and said, oh, I think what your children are doing is just so wonderful, and went into the Woolworth and bought us all nursing school, a Coca-Cola. At that point, I decided, well, I think I better leave.
And so the
woman who invited me, Dee Brown, and I, we went up to our own neighborhood on Lancaster Avenue around 42nd and Lancaster, where there was a Woolworth. And so we started picking at that Woolworth, and then along comes my mother and one of her friends, and looked at me and then proceeded to try to go into the Woolworth to buy some thread, and at that point I blocked her with my picket sign, and she in a huff left, and interestingly we never said anything else about it, and this is the same mother who taught me to use my adversity to my advantage.
I figured out to spend the night with his fiance.
My family legends go back as far as a person who we call Granddaddy Myers.
Edward Brown.
And Granddaddy in 1970, my mother, I graduated from high school in Philadelphia. I entered the Tyler School of Arts graduate program in sculpture
at that time
in 19,
in the middle of 69.
And at that time, the Cheltenham Arts Center had an annual tri-state sculpture competition. And so my sculpture teacher demanded that we all enter. So I entered with him and my other colleagues in graduate school. And won first prize. And the judge in 1969, minimalist sculptor Tony Smith. And the next day, next year, I entered. Finally,
a black woman came.
Judge was George Sugarman.
Oh, I think what your children are doing.
And I won first prize then also. Unfortunately, I was never able to either meet Tony Smith or George Shipman. The woman who invited me, Dee Brown, and I, we went up to our own neighborhood on Lancaster Avenue around 42nd and Lancaster, where there was a Woolworth. And so we started picking at that Woolworth, and then along comes my mother and one of her friends, and looked at me and then proceeded to try to go into the Woolworth to buy some thread, and at that point I blocked her with my picket sign, and she in a huff left, and interestingly we never said anything else about it, and this is the same mother who taught me to use my adversity to my advantage.
I figured out to spend the night with his fiance.
My family legends go back as far as a person who we call
Upon graduating from high school, I was fortunate enough to go to work for a man named Leon Augustus Brown, who told me that he was a seventh son of a seventh son born for good luck. And so as a child, his mother would carry him around in Jersey and put his hands on people and give them things. Products and so forth. Eventually, when I met him, he was one of the most sophisticated people in my life. And he worked, he was an artist, and he worked for the National Drug Company, which was at that time in Philadelphia, at Haynes and McCallum Street. And he had his own studio at 7208 Germantown Avenue. And we would take on all jobs that he would find, from $35,000 keychains for Ford Motor Company to putting in an entry for the Franklin Delano Roosevelt Monument in Washington.
I won first prize then also.
Eventually, they asked him to. Now, he, even though he did all kinds of sophisticated advertising and promotional installments, et cetera, for the National Drug Company, because he was black, he was the head of maintenance, and he would do architectural projects for them. For instance, we designed a library, and he instructed the renovation of an old house, and that eventually became the library. And one of the final projects that I worked with him on was a lab. The National Drug Company was working with potentially explosive enzymes, and they didn't want to have to go out into the suburbs of the country. So we designed a bunker lab on Haynes Street that last time I checked was still there.